Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Leftuke.
Brilliant. OK, weather today. It's pretty brilliant in its own way. Highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 15 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a cloudy start with occasional rain, punctuated with heavier bursts. But sunny spells will develop throughout the course of the day. Good morning, John Wenham. Are you well? As well as that can be expected. Excellent there, you see. He's just all set and ready to go, as I say, much like yourself, Katie, but clearly has not had his first coffee of the day. We'll say that again. John Wenham, good morning. Are you well?
Good morning. You caught me by surprise here, putting on me earphones.
You see, this is it. You know, it's the time spent in makeup and so on and so forth. Katie, we mentioned Food Fusion last night. I know you caught part of the show with Phil Leonis, but we've kind of moved on since then, although he did actually refer to it to one of the pieces. Given that you are obviously one of our great Birmingham culinary cuisine experts, almost unmatched, it has been said in Birmingham, what do you make of Chicago's popular shepherd's pie in an egg roll?
Oh, it sounds horrible.
Oh, yeah. John, shepherd's pie in an egg roll? Is that something that which would float your boat?
It wouldn't float my boat, but I suppose it would be do something for starving man.
Well, there's always the star. Or woman, of course. It's not just men who clearly sort of can go through this. Okay, well, as somebody who once spent time in New Zealand, and of course we had a New Zealander on the show last night making her debut, that was Jessica Ward, of course. How about this one from Auckland, New Zealand, Katie? Pizza served with a cheesy Marmite stuffed crust.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Okay, that's all right. Hong Kong?
I think I'd try it.
You try it. Would you try it, John? Would you
go for it? Yes, I'd try it.
Okay, so you try it. So far, the shepherd's pie and the egg roll is not doing well. Still three to more to go. Very briefly, in Hong Kong, a Scotch egg and avocado salad, John. Scotch egg and avocado salad.
Yes, well, yes, I'd give that a try as well. Oh. I like Scotch egg.
Katie, are you a Scotch egg lover?
No, I hate them.
It's
very feel sick. Just smoking that out.
Well, there you are. That's not good at all in any sense of the word, really. So definite downer there. Okay, off to Benidorm now in Spain. Black pudding with bacon, mushrooms and mango chutney. Now, Katie, I know with respect to your breakfast appreciation, you might well go. I mean, Winnie would probably go with that one in Benidorm, if she was in Benidorm, of course. There we are. Would it be a black pudding with bacon, mushrooms and mango chutney?
I'd have it, but without the black pudding.
I'd have it without the mango chutney, I think.
You see, there we are. and the one which certainly didn't do at all well last night, and in terms of Food Fusion, certainly with Heather Rogers, we might run it past William Sitwell later on in the morning, from Sydney, Australia, the bacon and black pudding sandwich. John?
Oh. Yuck.
It's just congealed blood, that's all.
I don't mind black pudding. But
a bacon and black pudding sandwich pushing it too far.
Yes, I think so.
Katie, would you be hoovering that one up, you know, if we were sort of say bacon sandwich and bacon and black pudding sandwich?
No, definitely not.
Okay, well, that kind of puts a little full stop across that little sort of piece of news we had to sort of sort through. A bit of housekeeping from last night. Of course, if you'd like to actually share your own particular views, you can always send in studio@sirenonline.co.uk. I hear on good authority that Jeff Thompson is looking for a substitute for his bananas, you know, for Fridays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays. It's a possibility, you know, bacon and black pudding sandwich. There we are. Suggest that. Keep him all sorts of ways. Which brings us neatly round to the over 65s bucket list. Yes, there is one apparently, John. I'm astounded about this. Apparently it's regionally developed. Katie, as obviously you celebrate your 85th birthday on the planet, are you likely to want to try skydiving, or have you tried skydiving? Is that something which you'd like to try before you finally shuffle off this mortal coil?
I don't think it would be. No.
John, skydiver?
I don't mind heights, but...
onto a cricket pitch, possibly, you know?
Yes.
Those from the northeast are most willing to put the effort in to learn a new language, according to this survey put together by Centra Pulse, from that point of view. I mean, obviously, Katie, you're in the Midlands, so and Birmingham is its own language, as we found in the recent survey, that cuppa tea... all ranges that exactly they are classic Birmingham tweets. Apparently, John, the Birmingham accent is the most difficult to do, even hardier than Geordie.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Why? Katie, of course, responded instantly by saying, "Well, that's because obviously there can only be one Brummie accent, and that's it, as put forward by yourself, really." So there we are, Katie. Another possible job opportunity for your good self as you head off into postgraduate study. Teach people to speak Brummie proper, like.
Okay. Good day.
Yeah, well, we've got Learn Yourself Geordie that was put together by Mike Neville, I think, a good few years ago. So if you can Learn Yourself Geordie, and we'll speak to Ian Lennox there, then you too could conceivably actually talk Brummie with Katie. No, you see, I've done a Geordie accent. It's metamorphosed. It's gone from Geordie to some sort of strange beastly sort of thing from that point of view.
I think that was a hybrid.
Do you think so? Yeah, well, fusion scenarios, etc. Other lines as we finally sort of continue in terms of this. Katie, have you ever flown a helicopter?
No.
Would you consider doing that?
I think that'd be quite fun, yeah.
Okay, John?
Yes, I'd have a go.
Yes. For helicopter for that point of view. Climbing mountain? I suppose, John, you do it every day. You produce one of the every week you do one of these gig guides, really, diaries.
One of these events diaries. That's mountain itself.
A mountain of technology to get over. Let him into the computer constantly. Katie, would you consider climbing a mountain, or do you climb a mountain every time you just get up on a morning?
No, I think I'd like to do it because obviously it's an experience. So yeah, I'd definitely go for that one.
Okay. And also addressing from this, proving that there's a first time for everything in the over 65s bucket list, things that people would like to do before, as I say, they shuffle off into a whole new dimension: buying a house, going to university, and falling in love. Oh, there we are.
Again.
Yeah, astounding. Okay, coming up on the rest of the programme, we have Richard Fitzwilliams, who's just been in Paris, Katie. Yeah, because it was an open day weekend in Paris where he went to 15 embassies, which is Cannes embassy, Luxembourg Palace, the Senate, and of course the National Assembly. So given his somewhat controversial views about the Scottish building that houses their parliament, who knows what he'll actually make of Luxembourg Palace. We'll find out about that, and of course the British Embassy in Paris as well. I think it's always nice to see that Siren 107.3 FM is represented in the British embassies across the world, really. You can listen to us, obviously, sirenonline.co.uk, and I hope they are, because, you know, in these challenging days where we have the Prime Minister saying that Her Majesty the Queen was purring. I can't quite see that myself, you know, purring over the results. No. But that's Richard again. I mean, Katie purrs, you know, she, yeah, God, I saw that. But she does, you know, because when we get the grimace and purr.
I can tell that even over the airwaves.
Well, she does, yeah, she can tell. She's, you know, first coffee, your cup of coffee in the morning, and one of those extra large breakfasts without the black pudding. Hold the black pudding. You know, she'll be purring away quite happily. Katie, have you had good and reasonably interesting, effective starts to the show today? Have you enjoyed being on the show?
It's been really fun.
Yeah, well, you know, we try. And sometimes we succeed. Are you back again next week?
Yes, I am.
Almost a lost treasure from times past, specifically the 1960s, every mother's son with their greatest hit, so to speak, Come On Down to My Boat. Somebody who didn't use a boat to get over to Paris, we don't think, but has always got a whole range of stories to actually share with us, and obviously leaves every listener purring with delight. Purring with delight is, yes, the one and only Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Well, I am glad I'm not the Prime Minister.
He does do things that you just, honestly, you know, David, please, sort it out. That's what we say, sort it out.
Well, you do not repeat, and certainly not to a stranger, not to anyone, the contents of private audiences. To the Queen, to do so in public in that complacent way, that was inept.
Inept, John. Inept. You know, Richard has just referred to our Prime Minister as inept. In public as well. People can listen. Yeah, never mind. It's all right, David. We appreciate what you're trying to do. I mean, after all, somebody has to try and match Boris Johnson for buffoonery. Anyway, enough of such political shenanigans, because there's a whole heap of other important things going on there. And just a side point there. As we would like to obviously point out, bonjour, Monsieur Fitzwilliams. Qu'est-ce que c'est? And indeed, qu'est-ce que c'est? Comment allez-vous, monsieur?
Well, yes, a very, very interesting visit, which I timed to go to Paris on the weekend where they have the open days for the famous buildings and embassies, and particularly interesting to go to our ambassador's residence, I have to say, and I must give full marks to Sir Peter and Lady Ricketts because they welcomed their guests. Now, that adds that very, very intimate touch, and only the prefect of Paris and his wife did it likewise. It just, for other embassies, they had some of the staff there, but you didn't have that touch, which I thought was, well, very much appreciated, and certainly very, very impressive to see.
Well, certainly the only ambassador in recent years was actually Colin Armstrong, who's the UK ambassador to Ecuador, partly because he was doing something with respect to his family home and a range of things called the Forbidden Corner in North Yorkshire. But he is, I mean, as you'd expect, really, because let's face it, it's pointless putting somebody to represent the country as an ambassador of the country if they're going to be an imbecile, a lout, or a boorish soul.
Well, yes, also when it's on an open day.
Exactly. People would be asking questions.
People could, and it was. I thought it worked very well indeed. And, of course, one of the things when you go around the great buildings of Paris, I mean, it is a cornucopia of porcelain, tapestries, practically wall-to-wall, extraordinary examples of Baroque, and those amazing chandeliers of the Quai d'Orsay, particularly the last three rooms, just about blind you. There was a concert there, which I very, very much enjoyed, and the National Assembly, interesting there, and also vast numbers of chandeliers, and the Senate, perhaps the most ornate building, certainly one of the rooms, that I can remember, but very, very interesting to have the opportunity of going, say, to the Russian embassy, where there was this exhibition of memorabilia linked to the First World War, or indeed the Swiss embassy, or the American General George C. Marshall Center, which they've renovated, or the Italian embassy. The Italians have a fabulous palace, because in Rome, the French embassy is the Palazzo Farnese, which has this gallery by the Carracci brothers. Absolutely amazing. So I knew that this would be impressive, and certainly it was.
John, have you ever visited any particular embassies or desired to sort of check out, shall we say, the British embassy in Croatia, for instance?
No, I've not actually visited the embassies. Oh. I visited when I drove the one of the ex-mayors of Lincoln down to the Mauritian embassy,
right,
in London, and Mr. Tufany, the mayor, ex-mayor.
Was that Mr. Tufany?
Yeah.
I could say something, but I best not, because lawyers will be listening, and so is Richard, so there we are.
But I drove him down for he had an appointment down there, and went into the
tradesman's entrance
downstairs, had a very nice meal.
Oh, well yes. as long as they realise that coming from up north, you know, as you did,
that's
obviously
right,
in Lincoln,
yeah,
that you had to leave the flat cap, the ferret, of course, at the door and the gate, because, you know, there are certain sort of prejudices that possibly still come through. Richard, is this something which, I mean, do we have it in Britain, or do we know? I mean, I just asked John, has he been to an embassy? I mean, obviously, there are certain times when you do in other countries and so on, but, you know, is it something which we should have, or it seems
so? Well, embassies serve a purpose that should, I mean, there are those who take it for granted.
But I mean, obviously,
sometimes you literally have, I mean, you have, for example, when there's the diplomatic niceties, or indeed when you have wish to issue a protest, that you're looking after the interests of your citizens who either visit the country or resident in, a whole host of things, including showing the flag and the cultural events, which are tremendously important, and of course the business side to it. And in the British ambassador's residence, and incidentally, this dates from the Duke of Wellington. Very interesting, the Hotel Shiraz was the first embassy building which was purchased abroad by the British government.
Mm-hmm.
And here you see a fabulous dinner service laid out. I always like it when they do this, because I remember being most impressed by the one at Buckingham Palace when I saw that laid out for a dinner, and also last year at the Elysee Palace. So it really does.
Well,
it does make a very interesting display, because after all, you're showing the visitors how you entertain your guests.
Did they have, Richard, and there are only certain folk, a certain chronological period in time that might appreciate this, but did they have those wonderful chocolate eggs wrapped in sort of silver foil, where people say, oh, you spoil us, Monsieur Ambassador, with the, Ferrero thingies?
The only eggs I saw were at the Russian embassy, and they were Fabergé.
Ah, Fabergé, yeah.
Well, yeah, there you had the portraits of
the
Tsar.
Unfortunately, John, that puts our very early Easter egg that Andrew David is actually hosting in his office in a bit of context, really.
That's right, yes.
Chocolate egg, Fabergé egg, where are we going? Never mind.
We could go to the Lido, of course. That's
let's do that. We need some dancing. We need some glamour. Let's go to the Lido and the Champs-Élysées.
It's terrific. I have to say that the Lido dates back to 1946, and this is their 26th show, and my goodness me, they lay it on. Absolutely packed house too, and it's a two-hour show. It's designed by Pierre Rambert, their artistic director. You've got 600 costumes, you've got 23 sets, and you've got the ability of using their stage. It's tremendously spectacular. For example, pyramid can rise and fall, or indeed water fountains can spout.
Yeah, well, you haven't been in our studio, Richard, so you don't know what sort of magical things we're doing here.
I imagine the bluebell dancers, or perhaps the Lido boy dancers.
As you know, John is devastated that the last couple of shows he's done, we've had to say farewell to the bluebell dancers, but, you know, they'll be there, you know, they'll be coming back, don't worry.
A bird woman arrives in a cloud of feathers on stage. That is spectacular, and she's a very good singer, so it makes for an entertainment, which is certainly supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, if I may borrow the word from Mary Poppins. It really is a terrific show. It's colourful, it's lively, and the audience seemed to enjoy it enormously. I certainly did.
Even in terms of fusion, whether it be food or otherwise, or cultural fusion.
Well, the food was exceptionally good. I was wined and dined very well.
Did you have shepherd's pie in an egg roll?
I had duck.
Ah, there we are, you see. You know, poor little duck making that ultimate sacrifice. And I was just thinking of the personification of Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews actually appearing in. I suppose she did Victor Victoria, but there we are.
I avoided
her. I thought you might. Much like Sex Tape, perhaps, with Cameron Diaz, which neatly brings us around to something which might emerge in the John Wenham Diary events thing in future things. Based on the fact that, on your recommendation or not, Richard, will be the decision as to whether John includes it or not, as the case may be. So no pressure.
Well, I have to say that the premise of this, the concept, was very, very funny. And it's something that, incidentally, Prince Harry was seen again with Cressida.
I know you were excited about that last week, Richard.
Cressida Bonus,
let them do their own thing. You know, if they want to purr, they can purr.
Well, they... whether they purred at this or not, I can only say that it's a hilarious idea, because they've got a couple. You've got Cameron Diaz as Annie, and you've got Jason Segel as Jay. Firstly, they have sex all the time, but it's when a couple of kids arrive that they don't have any time for it, and they find it hard to reignite their passion, so they decide to make a video of themselves having sex. And the book, The Joy of Sex, has all the different positions. Now, the trouble is that the tape is synchronized inadvertently to iPads, which the couple had given away. Therefore, especially since she's awaiting promotion and her boss has got one, well, they've got to get them back. Now,
I see where we're going with this, and it could be very, very embarrassing, really.
And it's very, very embarrassing, because it's very, very bad.
Mm.
What is unfortunate is it really fails because the script isn't witty.
Oh,
it isn't funny. Indeed, what you get is Cameron Diaz has been in dreadful films before. I'm thinking of Ridley Scott's Contender. Let us pass over that very swiftly.
I'm sorry, Richard, but the notion of Cameron Diaz in a dodgy movie, that just doesn't occur. She doesn't do dodgy. As in, Diaz, don't do dodgy. You know, think of something
dodgy
about Mary.
This isn't just... oh, that was very funny, but quite a long time ago I would make out... but Jake
Charlie's Angels?
Perhaps Jay Kasdan's direction, what should be a funny social send-up of our obsession with the social media and what can go wrong, and indeed it can, something that really could either have, if they'd made a more serious movie, it could have had some poignancy. If it had been a really good comedy, which this was trying to be, I should have laughed I didn't laugh. I got extremely impatient at what, frankly, was a load of rubbish and what became a bore. For example, the tape, they have to attack the headquarters of a U-Pawn, and there's philosophizing boss played by Jack Black, who talks about the problem
It's too early in the day, Richard. Let's just say you didn't like it. John, I don't think you're going to necessarily put sex tape on your list of things to go and see.
Definitely avoid it. Especially since Jason Segel, by the way, is so bad. He's chased, incidentally, by a very, very fierce dog in one scene that seems to go on forever, and it's a great pity that the dog wasn't cannibalistic.
Oh, dear. I must admit,
it was really a bad film, frankly.
I think we got the message. I will actually do a little thumbs up to a movie I finally managed to get around to seeing recently, though, which I thought was very interesting from a philosophical perspective in terms of relationships and so on. And that was, of course, the classic Her, H-E-R, which is a man's relationship with his operating system.
Yes, I thought that was extremely effective. We discussed it, remember?
Absolutely.
Sometime
and
ago.
It only took me about 7 months to get around to actually watching it. So there we are. You know, that's quite good. You know, moved on. To the Ballet Boys. Another triumph, or where are we going with this one?
We're going with this one, Scandinavian movie, and it's for really only for those interested in
Scandinavian
ballet
movies.
And, the problem is one can also get duds, but they do have a high standard generally. The facts are that you follow Lucas, played by Bjornaboy Bjornstrod, who is a teenager setting his sights high in the world of ballet, his friends Sivert and Jorgen, and we follow a four-year period in their careers. Lucas, as I say, aims high, and it's where he ends up that is extremely interesting. But it's a movie that the problem is you don't really feel for the or get to know his pals. But I would mention that it's only 73 minutes long. It's one of those, it is a very slight film. It's more for television than actually spending an evening in the cinema.
It was shot over 4 years, Richard.
Indeed it was. And I saw it in 73 minutes, and I rather enjoyed it. Because, although I admit I don't have time, I like ballet, and those who do will find the training scenes very interesting, and the cast perform perfectly adequately. It's a documentary.
According to The Guardian critic Leslie Felperin, a pleasant but not especially insightful Norwegian documentary.
That is a very good description of it. And I would love to hear what The Guardian critic said of Sex Tape. No,
yeah,
insight.
Don't go there. I think,
boring,
please.
Dreary.
I'm looking actually at the view, the vista of Lincoln provided by our satellite system there, and I see gloriously that there is a system of which it says, good news, there are no traffic incidents in this view.
That is drama.
I thought so. I thought I'd just put that in there. You know, if only because it's very rare that actually, but I thought I would. You know, I just rolled that out there, 27 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock.
I think that's really impressive.
Well, thank you. it's just moving in its own way. Richard, it's been sensational as ever, but I need to ask John Wenham, from what he's been recommending there, the wonderful Champs-Élysées, the ambassadorial residences, or indeed the movie Sex Tape, or indeed Ballet Boys. Anything floats your boat?
Well, I have visited Paris in the past, and I really enjoyed it. I did Paris and Versailles, and it was really a unique experience. I really enjoyed it, and I expect, Richard, you agree with me on that one.
Oh, yes, it's an absolutely glorious city, and I mean some of the museums, too, that I was able to get to see Monet's Water Lilies at the Orangerie, or indeed the Musée Jacquemart-André, which has always got a lovely permanent collection. But it was very, very interesting to set a weekend. I got to actually to 15 ministries, palaces, and embassies, and so on, and it really was absolutely riveting. It's perfectly true that it's a blaze of glory, and you know, it's one of those things that remains with you. And yes, the French are heavily influenced by, you know, by this aspect of their past. It is interesting, however, talking about the past, I would just make the point, it seems to be certainly the thing to do, if not actually the law in any ministry, that you put contemporary art alongside the traditional, and sometimes that works. But more often than not, it is a disaster, and I particularly mention the Ministry of Education, because whereas in the brochure you just see the antique works and the
masters.
Works of the past, but yeah. When I went there, almost the whole building was devoted to abstract daubs and rather silly collages. Indeed, in one ministry, Hotel de Villas, it was beautiful inside. You looked out of the garden, and there were a series of what seemed like straw dummies on the lawn, which is totally incongruous. I mean, the Prime Minister's home, the Hotel Matignon, his taste in paintings seemed, more contemporary paintings, was quite interesting. But it does vary, and certain individuals can let themselves down very, very badly when you suddenly see a room which is absolutely glorious with all these tapestries and chandeliers and so forth, and then you look up and there's something that really, really doesn't go with it. It isn't synchronized at all, and it shows bad taste. So, you know, there's that to be aware of. I do think it's done a lot, and I do congratulate the prefect of Paris in the Hotel Normandier for, at least if he had such works, not making the public see them, because they usually, I have to say, I've not been impressed by contemporary French art, and they have a lot of it on show in these ministries.
Richard, I think you're in danger of becoming a Francophile, so let's just hold it there.
That's true.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed, and also I would just mention, talking about Paris as a whole, it's so glorious, the boulevards, the colours, but beware of the thunderstorms, because at the Quai d'Orsay, just as it happened last year, it happened this year, and I got caught in an absolutely ferocious...
Il pleut.
And luckily I had a small umbrella, because a lot of people didn't.
Well, you see, always prepared. So I take it, Richard, you'll be back with us in about 7 days from now?
I look forward to it enormously.
Ooh!